Hello and welcome back. We're your hosts. I'm Sarah Crawford.
And I'm Santana Guerra.
And this is The Daily Disciplines.
In today's episode, we'll be taking you on a refresher of the state of the interdisciplinary and anti-disciplinary course thus far, bringing you some highlights from our conversations on topics of experience, knowledge, and, starting today, the university. Passing to Sarah to start us off with an introduction to what we covered in the early weeks of the course.
Thank you, Santana. Yes, it's been an invigorating first half of the semester with 22 contributors, 24 with our professors, from a large range of disciplines in the humanities. English, French, Spanish and Portuguese, East Asian studies, classics, history, politics, music, art and archaeology, architecture, religion, and, of course, myself in comparative literature.
And me in anthropology.
So we're really bringing together a lot of diverse backgrounds for these conversations. In our initial class, we took some time to share about those varying research interests before beginning a discussion on what our final collaborative project for this class might look like. Putting aside our academic backgrounds, we also have folks with some great creative skills. Sewing, creative writing, choreography, graphic design, vinyl pressing, and the like.
Wow, what a talented group. Seems like we have a lot of options. Can you provide any clarity on what the final project might be?
Great question. You know, as our discussions have progressed since that first class, it seems we're really looking to create a project based on sound or audio, which is one reason we've decided to do our presentation in this podcast form today. Audio, though, is a pretty broad category, so the class has started to experiment with sound as a form to help with our brainstorming and to sharpen our collaboration skills. I'll let you explain what that's been like for us.
Right you are, Sarah, right you are. And although there has not been a decision on the exact form the project will take, the class is experimenting with organized play, inspired by Kathy Barbarian. Dr. Nishikawa and Dr. Wample transformed our collective interests into a stripsody, an onomatopoeic performance using only our voices. Despite being filled with screaming leviathans and sexo-colonial resistances, the piece was never performed. Nonetheless, it provided a useful method for thinking through the themes we share.
And what were those?
I'm glad you asked. For some reason, the class seems to be obsessed with questions of loss, silences, law, decay, collage, archives, wombs, tombs, fragments, duties, sovereignties, and almond milk. Come to think of it, performance is something that seems to be an organizing principle in this class. If all of this feels a little disorienting, well, you aren't alone. Elaine, a previous guest on the show, we'll discuss in a minute, said it was like being dropped into a conflict zone without any prior knowledge of what to do or how. I feel that way sometimes. What do you think, Dr. Harrison?
Okay, let's not get off track. What about the previous week?
I appreciate you bringing me back. Well, in the prior class, inspired by the artist Jeff Whetstone and his film about a singular tree on a tour in New Orleans, the class created a soundscape of a single day in front of our beloved Firestone Library.
Well, how did that happen?
Fascinatingly, none of the students knew what they were doing. The assignment instructions were simply to record 15 seconds of sound in front of the library. Dr. Wample and Dr. Nishikawa put it together afterwards. Collectively, we recorded leaf blowers, tour guides, skateboarders, meandering conversations, footsteps, car horns, and crickets. All of it has made me wonder about how to do a project with an organized form, but one in which none of us know the outcome of our creative labor. In any case, it was a beautiful illusion we made.
An artificial realism, perhaps.
Ah, that phrase keeps coming up. I don't know what it means, but I know that we mean it.
All right. Thank you for sharing, Santana. Sounds, pun intended, like those have been some thought-provoking exercises. They've really allowed for practical tie-ins to the themes we've been exploring as a class. For instance, we spent our second and third weeks of the course investigating experience as a theme, building off readings from Emerson, Benjamin, Raymond Williams, Agamben, Cedric Robinson, Gloria Anzaldúa, and bell hooks. We discussed varying forms of experience, the quote-unquote real, such as living through a historical event or acquiring a new skill for practice, as well as the seemingly artificial or fabricated, like attending a Renaissance fair or participating in a historical reenactment. There are the less clear-cut experiences, too. Where, for example, does viewing a play or piece of media fall in the range of real to artificial experience? And what is the relationship between experience and knowledge, our next theme, which we tackled in weeks 4 and 5? To what extent does experience constitute knowledge? In those conversations, Dr. Wampole made the excellent observation that wisdom seems to be the result of combined experience and knowledge. Our knowledge reading packet involved such thinkers as Gilbert Ryle, Foucault, Donna Haraway, Rancière, Sadia Hartman, Simone Weil, Glisson, André Lorde, Deleuze, and Guattari. Knowledge, we acknowledged, is not necessarily a set or empirical object, shaped rather by social, political, and institutional factors and mediators. This, of course, led us to the question of transmission. How is knowledge transmitted? Can experiences be transmitted, particularly minority experiences? Is personal experience the only way to truly acquire knowledge? We look toward Plato's allegory of the cave to shape this discussion. As a class, we seem to particularly embrace Glisson's argument for opacity in knowledge, with space provided for interpretation, which can also potentially bridge the experience-knowledge gap. Collaboration, too, took a central role in our discussion with Elizabeth Margulies from the Musicology Department, who encouraged a shift in our thinking from theorizing to producing knowledge and producing it through collaborative interdisciplinary work. Santana has already noted how we began to implement those ideas in our sound experiments in class, and I'll pass back to him to detail how those discussions of knowledge progressed in weeks 5 and 6.
Thank you, Sarah. Looking back on the past weeks, I feel like we've been skirting around the issues of singularity and multiplicity. It makes sense, though, being a class made up of 15-odd disciplines between music, sound, ecologies, and hegemonic histories. The image of Silvano Bassotti's chaotic score comes to mind.
You mean the image that D&G use in their opening to the Rhizomes text?
Exactly. And these images, along with some accompanying metaphors we've been playing with for a while now, Jeff Whetstone, who was mentioned earlier, had us thinking about the relationships between the observed, recorded, the staged, within his photographs of dead fish, trees, industrial shipping, and fishers on the shores of New Orleans. Now, something else has come up. It's a question of political action, attention, and will. Although we have not discussed her in class too much, Sadia Hartman has brought up some thoughts about wayward anarchisms through collective practices of survival. Survival and riots feel important, given that guillotines, we've noticed, have been brought up in class conversations. In any case, at this point, I'm certain we have all noticed that our knowledge and practices are coming out through a play in forms. The previous week's introduction attests to that, such as the staged sonic performance and set of collages we saw. Of course, this podcast and the newspapers make it visible as well, as this entire production was inspired by Elaine, the renowned reporter who shared stories with the class of her time with French presidents, the Clintons, war zones, and what would you call it? Journalistic restrictions?
Not censorship.
I don't want to get in trouble with the government.
So much for political statements.
Survival and self-preservation, right? But seriously, this week we are covering universities, which is especially important given the U.S. government's attack on them. I'm wondering how the conversations will go as we begin to think through the immense violences that universities have also wrought, especially Princeton when considering its own history of slavery.
These are going to be complex topics for us to discuss.
Right, but I think this week's guest will help us parse through some of these complexities. Today, we're going to have Robert Pogue Harrison join us. He's a professor of French and Italian in a place we've never heard of before. Stanford is what they call it, I think.
Careful, Santana. He is a chevalier of the French Republic.
Ah, indeed. Apologies, sir. Forgive me for being an obnoxious proletarian. But He's written numerous books on the human condition, relations with the dead, and even a dialogue. This week, we read a piece he wrote about forests and the legacies of the Enlightenment.
I heard he was in a band, too.
Indeed he was, Glass Wave, a sort of avant-garde experimental humanities band. Apparently, there is a rumor that our wonderful professor, Dr. Wampole, is the bass player.
You're joking, and how did you find that out?
Wikipedia. And according to the New York Times, their first show was given to an audience of captive first years.
Oh, I hope we'll get to hear some of their sounds.
Maybe we can get the class to pressure them.
A reminder to listeners just tuning in today that every week we also have two students bring in physical objects inspired by our readings and class discussions, which also function as inspirational materials and metaphors for our ongoing thinking. Students can either offer explanations or leave the objects open to group interpretation. In our classes on experience, we had as objects a cobblestone, a prescription bottle, a metal Renfair rose, a wooden puzzle box, Library of Congress catalog cards, and an object that has stuck with us in the weeks following, a carton of almond milk, which has led our thinking about the problems inherent in archival work and the categorization of knowledge and experiences.
And talk about knowledge. Apples became a vector for attention as well. Not only a symbol of education, but a representational embodiment of the knowledge of good and evil. Over the many hours of class, students watched it decay alongside an object that won't decay for the next 1,000 years.
And what was that other object?
A plastic dinosaur. Permanence and impermanence entangled in the space of industrial life. The dinosaur, Ari thought, was the perfect stand-in for the ironies of fossil fuels and the transformations it entails. But these were not the only things that invoked loss and recuperation. In week 6, students brought in a burned diploma and a baptismal icon. The interesting issue around the burned diploma, whether or not it was indeed the student's diploma or another student's. Now, you might be wondering, why did the student burn their diploma? Protest. Why'd they put it in a jar? Regret for the act of protest. Now, the icon on the other hand, well, I've been wondering about some of the underlying Christian motifs that keep presenting themselves, and this week is no different. Our esteemed guest, Robert Harrison, spoke much of how Descartes attempted to salvage God, but in doing so, transformed it into another than Christian God.
Fascinating. What do you think it all means?
No idea. We haven't read Freud or Lacan in this class, so I have no comment on our collective unconscious.
Well, that's all we have for you today at the Daily Disciplines.
Sarah, we forgot to make a Foucault joke. We could have said something about knowledge, power, discipline, punishment, something.
Ah, Santana, hosting with you is punishment enough.
And there it is.
Thank you for joining us, everyone.